Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to welcome you to the post-diet revolution. That's right, revolution. I am leading a revolt against the cultural and social norms that tell us we're only as good as what we weigh. I reject the idea that going on a diet is healthy and that it is the only way to lose weight. So not true. I say never trust a four-letter word where the first three letters spell die. That is a line from Taryn Brumfitt, who made the documentary Embrace. And if you haven't seen the movie Embrace, buy it, rent it. Find a way to see it. I guarantee it will change the way you feel about yourself. So, for all of you who are joining me in the post-diet revolution, guess what? That means no more counting calories or carbs. Not all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. If you'd like to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's on your mind. Remember, it is not what you're eating that is the real problem. It's what's eating at you. It's what's weighing on you. And when we identify and work through those underlying conflicts, those hidden conflicts, things with food totally change. So yesterday I was a guest on Good Morning La La Land on Focus TV Network. They have a transformational Tuesday every week. And by the way, if you miss the show, you can find the replay on Focus TV Network or on iTunes or on anywhere where you get podcasts, because the show is made into a podcast afterwards. And it is not your basic talk show. I think you're going to love it. The hosts are amazing. And check it out, definitely. So one of the hosts, Jeslyn, asked me, how do you create change when it comes to disordered eating? And my answer was that in order to change your relationship to food, you have to change your relationship to yourself. When you have a good relationship to yourself, you can comfort yourself with words and with language. You can be there with yourself. You can be there for yourself. You are an advocate for you. You can make yourself feel better. But when you have a bad relationship to yourself, it's a different story. When you're mean, critical, disparaging, when you shame yourself, you just feel bad, worse, horrible. And then, guess what? You are way more likely to eat to escape that mean, judgmental, internal critic. So you want to be happier? Stop being mean. And start being kinder to yourself. So how do you do that? So here are some suggestions from the daringtolivefully.com website. Don't you just love the name of that website? Daring to Live Fully. Oh, I love it. So they take note of the fact that Elizabeth Gilbert, the writer who wrote the best-selling book Eat, Pray, Love, says that one day, she's walking into a building in New York City. She's in total hurry. Her mind's on lots of other things. She's dashing towards the elevator when she catches a glimpse of herself in the mirror. Only, she didn't immediately recognize that that was her. Instead, she thought, oh, look, oh, I know her. She's my friend. And she moved towards her own reflection with a smile, ready to hug this person when she realized, oh my gosh, she was looking at herself. So much later, She was in Rome. She was feeling sad. She was feeling alone. And she remembered this incident when she thought she was a friend and she didn't recognize herself. And thinking of that day in New York brought her some comfort. And she wrote in her journal that day, "Never forget that once upon a time, in an unguarded moment, you recognized yourself as a friend." So in order to recognize yourself as a friend, you have to be good to yourself. You have to be kind to yourself. So here are some ways to do that. First of all, make some time for yourself. This is what I hear all the time. People say, well, I don't have time for myself because I'm so busy working and taking care of my family, or there's so many obligations I have to do for other people. Like, it's selfish to take time for myself. No, it's not selfish. It's self-care. It's self-love. So every day, make some time for yourself, and in that time, do something that brings you joy. Whether that's drawing, journaling, writing a short story, practicing the piano or the ukulele or whatever you love, do anything that you love to do. Be kind to yourself by giving yourself some me time each day. By the way, this is so important because often people will make me time when they're overeating or binging. It's like, I don't have time to do anything. But what are you doing when you're in a binge? You're just alone with yourself. And sometimes for some people, that's the only time that they have for themselves. If you make that time a priority, if you make it something that you love to do, you know what? That binge time is going to become less and less. Another way to be kind to yourself is to give yourself recognition. Often we are so quick to acknowledge the achievements of others, but slow to acknowledge our own, or we dismiss it. I can't even tell you how many times I've heard things like, well, yeah, I did get that promotion, but I worked really hard, so somehow that didn't count. Or, yeah, I got good grades in school, but I worked really hard for them. No, you worked really hard for them. That doesn't make it less of an accomplishment. That makes it an accomplishment. So often we don't acknowledge who we are and what we do, and that has to stop. So become aware of your own achievements. Give yourself recognition. When you do something you're proud of, stop for a minute and think about it. Don't just go like, oh, that was good, next. Praise yourself. Relish the achievement. Compliment yourself. Say, hey, you know what? Yay for me. I did that. I feel good about that. Think about what you would say to another person, or what you've said to other people when they have accomplishments. Do you say, oh yeah, that was good, next? Or do you say, wow, that was great. You did that. I am so proud of you. Ooh, good. That's what you've got to do for yourself. Then, we're all familiar with the inner critic, right? Got to cultivate your inner advocate. That inner critic, it's that voice in our heads that is so quick to judge and is always ready with a put down. It's always ready to tell you what you did wrong, what you didn't do right, what you didn't do enough of, what you did too much of. You know, oh my God, you ate that. I can't believe you ate that. You're never going to lose weight. You're such a loser, and not in a good way. Well, it's time for your inner critic to meet your inner advocate. And who is this inner advocate? It's another voice in your head. It's the one that is there for you, defends you, advocates for you. And basically, I find that for a lot of people, their inner advocate only shows up for other people. Right? They can tell other people, oh, you did so great, I'm so proud of you, you worked really hard, or okay, you ate pizza, it's okay, it doesn't mean anything about you, you're not going to gain, you know, 10 pounds overnight, it's not a crime, I hope you enjoyed it, something, right? But when it comes to themselves, that inner advocate goes mute. It disappears. It's like gone. And we want to bring it back so it is available to you. So when you hear yourself kind of ridiculing yourself, being scornful of yourself, putting yourself down, think about what you'd say if someone else was doing that to a friend of yours. You would jump in and you would tell them what's what. So you got to defend yourself against your own inner critic. It's a lot of inner dialogue. It's a lot of thinking. It's a lot of thinking. But eventually, with time, the more time that you catch your critic, challenge it, and then present it with something else, the less that critic is going to show up. And then eventually, it's only going to be the advocate that's there for you. So it's a process. But it is possible to really mute your critic and disappear it and really only have that advocate there for yourself. Another suggestion, another way to be kind to yourself is to forgive yourself. We all mess up, you know? We all do. Maybe you did something in the past you're not proud of. Maybe, you know, you let someone take advantage of yourself. Maybe you got scared and so you didn't take a step that in retrospect you should have taken. Maybe you failed to follow through on an important goal. Maybe you were not as nice as you could have been to another person. So if you are angry with yourself, if you have regrets, if you feel ashamed for what you did or what you didn't do, show yourself some kindness. Stop blaming yourself. Just resolve to do better from now on. Forgive yourself. If you'd like to join the conversation and talk about ways that you're kind to yourself or ways that you wish you could be kind to yourself, give me a call, 818-602-4929. I'd love to hear from you. Another way to be kind to yourself is to take good care of yourself. A caller. Hold that thought. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hi, Dr. Nina. This is Nicole. How are you?
Hi, Nicole. How are you? I recall you called last week about the Kardashian comment.
I did. And I had another question for you today. It's about spitting and chewing. I was just wondering if that's an eating disorder and what your thoughts are on it and how to deal with something like that.
Chewing and spitting is indeed an eating disorder, although it is not recognized as such in the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, but so what? It definitely is an eating disorder. And ultimately, as with all forms of eating disorders and disordered eating, the behavior is that weed, and it comes from something deeply rooted within. So if someone is chewing and spitting, it's the same as if they're binging and purging. It's actually kind of a binging and purging light. Or it's the same as if they're not eating or if they're binging. Something is motivating that behavior, and that something needs to be illuminated and processed and worked through. It's a way of managing some anxiety that people may or may not be aware of. But when you can recognize it, then you don't need to do it.
I see. Do you have any other recommendations? I mean, I think that's it's spot on. I definitely think that anxiety, is probably the root of the issue. So you would just say to work through that part?
Yeah, I would say that if anxiety is causing this behavior, then what is the anxiety about, and how do you respond to anxiety? Because a lot of people, and this kind of goes with what I'm talking about, when they get anxious, they get this attitude of, oh my God, why am I anxious? I need to stop being anxious, or they just got caught up in the anxiety. They don't have a voice that says, okay, I'm anxious. What am I anxious about? What is my fear? What's going on?
Right.
You know, what, and
no,
perspective.
I've been listening, so I definitely think that the self-love and just having compassion for yourself could maybe help, and forgiving yourself and just loving yourself could maybe also help.
But I would also, so the psychoanalyst in me also goes, but we have to look deeper, right? deep.
Right.
And then,
okay, so thanks. And then how about weight-wise? Do you think that the chewing and spitting affects, like, can actually affect your weight?
Well, wait, I just want to say the psychoanalyst in me says go deeper. So here's my deep thought.
Please.
That what is it that you want to, like, what is it you're getting rid of? Because spitting, consciously, it's, I don't want to take these calories in, and I just want to get rid of, you know, I don't want to take it in. So that's consciously. I don't want to gain weight, so I'm going to chew this and get rid of it. But, or it can be. But unconsciously, what is it I don't want to take in? What is it I want to get rid of? What is it that I want to spit out of my life? You know, what is it that I'm afraid of what intrusion, because sometimes there's like something about food feeling intrusive. You know, what intrusion in my life am I preventing through this symbolic behavior? Those kinds of thoughts, the symbolism of the behavior. As far as your other question and weight, you would be surprised at how many calories actually go in, just like with bulimia. Your body is good at absorbing those calories, so it's not really an effective form of weight loss.
Gotcha. So you're actually absorbing some calories, even if it's in your mouth, if you're not actually swallowing it, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Gotcha. And your body is so wise that it, you know, at a certain point, it'll realize, like, oh, things are not coming in completely, and can almost get smarter and grab onto those calories faster. That is not a very medical or scientific explanation, but that's essentially what happens. So yeah, it really defeats the purpose.
Gotcha. Okay.
If the purpose is weight loss, right? But the purpose may seem like weight loss, but you know, if really you just want to lose weight, you'd take care of yourself, you'd go on a good meal plan, and you'd lose weight and you'd feel good. So usually there's something else going on in that route. Any food for thought come to mind?
No, it's all really great and really helpful. I think that, yeah, just maybe finding the deeper root. I guess also sometimes, like, if there's something that, like, I really want to taste, but I don't want to take in the calories, I think that's when the chewing and spitting happens. So I don't know, what would you recommend there? Just having a small piece. I mean, sometimes it's hard just to have a small piece, because even if I have a small piece, then I feel so bad about it. And then, like, it makes me want to eat more of it, you know? So it's kind of like, it's not all or nothing. Yeah, it's kind of
it
like
is
all
or
nothing,
nothing
you
yeah.
know?
Why do you feel bad about having a small, even a small piece?
I guess maybe it's about just being perfect. Like, I'm not perfect. Like, if I messed up and I had, like, a little piece of, like, chocolate or something, like, it's over now, you know?
So you have some idea that perfectionism is tied to the ability to restrict yourself, and that having a piece of, what name the vice? What did you say?
I said chocolate.
Chocolate. So you have some idea that that's bad and you shouldn't do it. And therefore, if you do it, you feel bad about yourself. So the premise is, hey, it's perfect to deny myself. And if I eat that chocolate, there's something, I've done something wrong. And that is a perfect setup to feel bad about yourself tied to what you eat. It is not a crime to eat chocolate. It doesn't make you bad, and it doesn't make you perfect to not eat it. And actually, the idea of deprivation makes you want it more. So if you say to yourself every day, if I said to you every day, Nicole, I want you to eat chocolate every single day, that's the new perfect. That is the new perfect. You're going to eat chocolate every single day, at least one piece. Like maybe the first week you'd be like, I'm just being perfect according to Dr. Nina. Like I'm doing what she says. And maybe after a week or two, you'd be like, oh, I really don't want to eat this chocolate. I'm not into chocolate right now. Because when you take away the forbiddenness of it, then you can decide whether you want it or you don't want it. And then it becomes, am I having it or not having it? Not, am I being good or am I being bad? And then your sense of self is no longer tied to chocolate.
That makes sense. I get that. Thank you.
You're welcome. And if you want to take me up on my little directive, eat chocolate every day. I want you to have chocolate every single day. And you call me back next week and you tell me what you've noticed.
Okay, I will do that.
Okay, I look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nina.
Thank you, Nicole. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, perfection is not tied to what we choose to put in our mouths. So I'm very glad that she is questioning this and look forward to what happens. And for all of you out there, same thing. Eat chocolate or whatever your forbidden quote-unquote fruit is. Whatever is forbidden, give yourself permission to have it for a week. And I don't mean overeat it. I mean have some of it, a reasonable portion. And I think you'll notice that a week from now, it will have lost its allure. And it's just something that you have or you don't have. Okay, continuing on my list of how to be kind to yourself. One other way is to take good care of your body. Get enough sleep. Eat right. I know, easier said than done. Get some form of exercise on a regular basis. And you know what? When you move and when you exercise and when you eat healthy food, not because you're trying to be good, but because it nurtures and nourishes your body, you're going to feel so much better. And when you feel better, you're less likely to use food to feel better. Why would you do that? You already feel good. Another way to be kind is to respect yourself. Self-respect. That means valuing yourself for who you are. Oh, another caller. Hi, caller. You're on with Dr. Nina.
Hey, Dr. Nina. It's Brian from Chicago. How are you?
Hi, Brian from Chicago. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well. So here's my question. I hear you speaking about this fairly frequently, and it's one of those questions that I didn't even realize I had until I started thinking a little bit more about some of the things you've said, and I realized I don't have a good grasp on how this would work, which is you talk quite a bit about the weed and the root and the fact that people tend to engage in certain behavior, whether it's eating or not eating or working out incessantly, which I may know a little something about, or other behaviors that kind of are trying to address certain feelings that they're having, but they don't really know where those feelings actually come from. So I guess my question is, how, if you have like these sort of systems and you know, behaviors in place that pretty much address the immediate feeling and kind of help you through the day with the feeling, how do you ever get down to the root if everything you do is kind of designed to make you avoid it?
Yes, that is a very good question. How do you find out what's bothering you when you're using food or over-exercising or focusing on your weight as a way to not know what's bothering you? This is exactly why I created my... This is for people who turn to food, but I have a question for you for you specifically, since you mentioned, and yes, I think from your previous calls, yes, you know a little bit of something about living in the gym or exercising. But why I created my food mood formula was exactly for this reason. How do you know what's eating at you if your focus is just on food? And that food mood formula is ice cream and smooth and creamy kinds of foods. If those are the ones that you are drawn to, that signifies a need for comfort. So if you just find yourself with ice cream, with yogurt, with something like that, you want to ask yourself, well, you know, what kind of comfort do I need and how can I give it to myself or how can I seek it out from others? How can I get comfort in a way that doesn't involve eating? If it is kind of filling bulky foods like pizza, pasta, cake, muffins, that kind of stuff, toast, bread, that is associated with loneliness and filling a void. And so if those are the kinds of foods that you're drawn to, you want to look at, well, are you lonely? What void are you filling symbolically with food? What is it that is unfulfilling in your life? And that's the direction to go to with that. And the last category is there's one more. The second to last category is crunchy foods. People who just like eat a bag of Doritos or whatever. And that's associated with anger. So if those are your go-to foods, look at, how else can I express anger? How else can I express anger other than eating this bag of Doritos and then getting mad at myself for eating it? Last category is like chocolate, sweets. And that is associated with perhaps not having enough sweetness in your life, not having enough fun in your life. So that's one way to discern the root. Another way is what I call the miracle question. Ask yourself the miracle question, which is, if a miracle happened and you no longer felt the compulsion to eat or exercise or what have you, if you no longer felt that, what would be on your mind? If I could take away all thoughts of exercise and working out and all of that, what would you be left with that would be bothering you? What's bothering you?
And can people get to that on their own, or do they need therapy for that? Because I know in the past you've talked about, and I'm not always sure that I fully understand the phrase, but you've talked about things being like out of awareness, but no, what, how?
Out of awareness, but not out of operation. That, yeah.
Yeah. So I assume that means that there are things going on that you're not even aware are going on.
That's the roots.
Are people able to get to that on their own?
Well,
even if you kind of do the miracle question and say, okay, you will no longer dive headfirst into a gigantic bag of chips because you're angry. Once that's gone, what is on your mind? If it's out of their awareness, how do they get to it on their own?
By my food mood formula, ideally, yes, therapy, but not everyone can go to therapy. Not everyone wants to go to therapy. That's why I'm here every Wednesday, like giving you this sort of food for thought. Like, okay, let me help you. So I noticed that when I ask you, well, what would you be thinking about if you weren't thinking about working out all the time, you talked about, well, people and what do people do? So I'm curious, what would your answer be?
If I didn't work out all the time?
No, if you weren't thinking about working out, or what are you afraid of what would happen if you weren't working out all the time?
Oh, I can kind of tap into that because it's not necessarily out of my awareness. It would be that I'd become very, very sedentary and unhealthy like my dad.
Okay. So then look, then maybe looking at unresolved feelings about being like your dad would help you. I mean, I don't know that you want to work out less. You kind of, there's something that you get from it.
I'm pretty happy with it.
It's like, is it a vice or is it a virtue? It might be, it might be a virtue if it's not affecting your life in any negative way. But maybe if somebody else had unresolved dad issues, they might need to work through those so they're not dependent on working out as a way to make sure they're not like dad. So
yeah, I kind of view working out sort of the way people view coffee. You know, it's like, am I dependent on it? I don't think I'm dependent on it. I can certainly go without it, because if I ever go on vacation or just take some time off, I'm perfectly fine. But do I feel better having had it? I do.
Yeah, I mean, some addictions are actually more healthy than others, right? Or like work addiction. You know, work addiction is, I mean, but I speak as a work addict, an admitted work addict. work addiction can, it brings you so much that it hurts you so little that it's hard to give it up. But when it crosses the line and it becomes something, whatever it is, whether it's too much work, too much food, too much working out, too much whatever, when it starts to affect your life in a negative way, then you need to take a good hard look at it and figure out, well, why am I doing this behavior? How is it serving me? What is it protecting me from? And my miracle question is one way to answer it.
Well, maybe that's a question for the next time I call, which is when does something that you really, really enjoy doing, or you really feel better when you do it, when does it cross a line into addiction from just, you know, I just really enjoy doing it and I want to keep doing it? Where is there a line? Is it different for every person?
Well, I think it depends on the nature of the addiction, and I think it depends on the experience. I mean, addiction is such a reliance on, I mean, addiction is such a negative word, but it's when there are costs to it. When, for example, someone who might, this is not you, this is someone else I know who's so has to be in the gym like 3 hours a day, and she's just obviously it's not you, it's a woman. She's so preoccupied with it that it's at the expense of her family. Like, she doesn't see her family as much as she could because she's constantly at the gym and nothing's ever enough and she never feels good about herself, so that actually the cost to her is far higher than the benefits and the cost to people around her.
Right. So maybe then, like, one way to think about it is every time you undertake an action, there's a consequence, and it might be fine, it might be good, it might be bad, whatever it might be. So if you begin to see that the consequences to the actions you take are negative, and that still doesn't stop you, or at least it doesn't even prompt you to think about why you're doing it or what you're getting from it, maybe that's when you've crossed into more of an addictive behavior.
That's a good way to think about it. I'm currently in the process of finishing co-editing a book on the psychoanalytic understanding of addictions. All of the addictions we talk about are behavioral. So addictions are very much on my mind. But yes, what you just said is very much in line with, you know, the thinking is, you know, when it becomes something that is more harmful than helpful, it needs to be addressed.
Okay. Well, thank you, as always. Totally great conversation.
Well, thank you, as always, for a very thought-provoking question and helpful.
I will see you next time.
Okay. Thanks, Brian. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Where was I? I was on self-respect. We're talking about ways to be kind to yourself, cultivate an attitude of care. Because after all, overeating, binging, over anything is a frenemy. It is a friend in that it does something for you. It helps you in some way, although it is an enemy in that it hurts you. So the more you can be a friend to yourself, kind to yourself, an advocate for yourself, the less you're going to rely on the behavior, whatever it is, working out, chewing and spitting, overeating, binging, you name it. So self-respect is valuing yourself for who you are, not allowing other people to dictate your value, and not allowing the scale to dictate your value. Your self-worth cannot be measured on the bathroom scale. Self-respect means trusting yourself, thinking for yourself, forming your own opinions, making your own decisions, and not comparing yourself with other people, because that always ends up being like you're comparing their highlight reel to your real life. Never goes well. As who was it who said, comparison is the thief of joy? Teddy Roosevelt, of all people, said comparison is the thief of joy. So never compare yourself to anybody else. And self-respect is also about keeping your promises to yourself, following through on what you tell yourself you're gonna do. It means like trusting yourself and believing in yourself enough to do the things that you want to do for yourself. Another way to be kind is to treat yourself. And I don't mean like, you know, retail therapy or, you know, get a massage every day. But every once in a while, treat yourself. If you see something you want, get it. If it's expensive, save up for it. Don't wait for someone else to give it to you, or don't wait forever, or don't tell yourself how deprived you are. You can't have that, you can't have that, you can't have that. Because what happens is that when you feel deprived in your life, you end up making up for it in other ways. So if you feel deprived in life, you might use food as a way of not depriving yourself. Oh, I can't have those shoes. This is a terrible example. Let me use something better. You know, I can't have the satisfaction of getting a degree because I'm in the process of getting my degree and I'm in it. That's also a bad example. I can't think of a good example. Let's use both. Someone who really wants this really cool pair of shoes. Those of you who know me know that I have a definite Carrie Bradshaw shoe thing. I love shoes. It's just, it's a thing. Love shoes. And so maybe there's someone who really loves shoes but can't afford the shoes she wants. Maybe there's someone who's in the middle of getting his degree, but, you know, everything is difficult and everything is work and the light at the end of the tunnel is really far away, feeling deprived of the sense of accomplishment because that sense of accomplishment is coming so far off. I mean, whatever it is, if you feel deprived in your life, then that is a setup for using food to have more. When you don't have enough of something, food is always available. You can have, may not be able to have more shoes, may not be able to have another degree, but you can have whatever kind of food is out there. So deprivation in life can also lead to binging. So the less deprived you are, the less you're going to binge. Then there's soothing yourself. Now, soothing your body, actually. And I am not suggesting this as an instead of, like, don't binge. Instead of opening the fridge, take a bubble bath. Yeah, no, that does not work. If that worked, everyone who has a food issue would be walking around looking like a prune because they're in the bath all the time instead of eating. It doesn't work. But it is necessary element of self-care to be soothing to your physical self. So if you have like a tough day, or if you got an argument with someone, or, you know, you really messed up a presentation, just had one of those days in which everything could go wrong, and then it did, soothe yourself, not only with words, not only with kindness and being supportive of yourself, but also, you know, soothe yourself physically. You know, take that bubble bath. You know, turn on some music. Just give yourself a break. Do something for yourself that is just calming. You know, get in a bed and watch, you know, binge watch Friends, or, you know, whatever it is that's soothing to you. You know what that is. Do it. Another way to be kind to yourself is to remind yourself of your good qualities, you know? And I'm talking about not just your internal qualities, but your external qualities. So often we focus on what we don't like about our physical selves, that we forget what we do like. So, okay, maybe you're a little heavier than your ideal body type, than your ideal weight at the moment. But maybe you have like really great, thick, fabulous hair. You know, maybe you're not great at sports, but you're super good at math. You know, maybe you have a tendency to be like, you know, be super anxious, but you also have a great sense of humor. Like, if you only focus on what you don't like, you're just going to feel bad. But when you have a more balanced perspective and you say, okay, this is not the best part of me, but I have these great qualities, balance gives you a balanced perspective, and then it doesn't seem so bad, and then it doesn't seem so crushing, and then you're not going to be just setting yourself up to eat the kitchen. And lift yourself up. When you fail, when you make a mistake, when you do something wrong, which we all do, we all are human, we all fail, we all make mistakes, we all do something wrong. That's part of being a human on the planet. When we do that, there are two things we can do. We have two choices. We can either tear ourselves down or we can lift ourselves up. People who are kind to themselves lift themselves up. Tell yourself that it's going to be okay. Remind yourself that you've made mistakes in the past and you've gotten past them. And in the scheme of things, it's going to be okay. It may be bad now, but you're going to get through it. And then come up with a plan and take action so that you won't just beat yourself up, tell yourself how, you know, how embarrassed you are, how could you do that, recriminate yourself. That's the inner critic that makes you feel bad. Then when you feel bad, oh, there's the fridge. So when you lift yourself up, you are less likely to use food for distraction or comfort. Also, people who are kind to themselves tell themselves that they are enough. You know, everybody at some point in their lives thinks something along the lines of, you know what, I'm not smart enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not good looking enough, I'm not X enough, fill in the blank, I'm not blank enough. And this I'm not enough is just a form of tearing yourself down and looking at what you think is wrong or your perceived deficits. Instead of I'm not enough, which is just really destructive self-talk. And by the way, if you're telling yourself you're not enough, if you're using second person, cut it out. Ask yourself who's talking, and challenge the idea. But, you know, replace the I'm not enough with the I am enough. I am enough just as I am today. I am worthy. I deserve to be happy. It is my birthright as a person. I deserve to have good things. I deserve to, you know, have a loving relationship. I deserve to have be at a weight that I feel good at. I deserve to have a fulfilling job. I deserve to have friends who are mutual with me as opposed to me always taking care of them. You know, whatever it is, I am enough really is I deserve happiness. I deserve good things. And when you believe that, when you truly believe that, not only are you going to be kinder and nicer to yourself, but you're not going to tolerate when people treat you in a way that makes you feel bad. Another way to be kind to yourself, honor your dreams. Honor your dreams. If you respect yourself, you will honor your dreams. Don't downplay your dreams. Don't label them as silly, as fantasies, as being unrealistic, as who am I to think that I could do that? Take your dreams seriously by turning those dreams into goals. Turn your dreams into goals and then create a plan to achieve those goals. Honor your dream. If your dream is whatever it is, you can do it. You can find a way. Don't tell yourself you can't. You can. Another way to be kind to yourself is to kind of find the sweet spot between acceptance and striving. Acknowledging your potential, like, you know, you should know what you want and go after it. But if you're always unsatisfied, if nothing is ever enough, if nothing is ever good enough, then that's being unkind to yourself. You know, you've got to have that balance. You've got to say, okay, yes, I have dreams, I have goals, I have dreams that I've turned into goals, and I want to get somewhere in life. But I also want to appreciate where I've come from, what I've achieved, and where I am today. And when you do that, you're going to be happy with who you are, and you're going to feel good in the moment on the rung you are presently in the ladder of life. While at the same time, yeah, you're going to go up the ladder. You're going to take other steps up the ladder, but you don't have to focus on that. You can actually be where you are and feel good. And another one, hey, Nicole, if you're still listening, this is for you. Stop trying to be perfect. People who set a standard of perfection for themselves are setting themselves up for failure, because you know what? Perfection is unachievable. Can you think of anything more unkind than making success impossible for yourself? You can never have perfection. And by the way, what is perfect? What is perfect? And do we look at our friends and say, well, you know, I like my friends, I love my friends, but if they were just a little more perfect, I would really like them so much better. Of course not. We don't. We accept our friends for the interesting, imperfect, perfectly imperfect people that they are. So we've got to do the same for ourselves. So instead of setting a standard of quote-unquote perfection, try to be perfectly imperfect and accept that whatever is imperfect about you, rather than being shameful, is maybe it's what makes you interesting. Maybe it's what makes you lovable, even. So those are some ideas for you all to think about. I hope you practice some of what I've shared with you today, because, you know, when you're kind to yourself, when you're nice, when you're warm, when you're uplifting, you feel good. And when you feel good, you're less likely, in fact, you're unlikely to use food to feel good or any kind of disordered eating. So the key to change is to be kind to yourself. So thanks for joining me today on the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am so glad to spend this hour with you. If you'd like more food for thought, check out my website, winthedietwar.com, and follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at winthedietwar. See you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.